Quiet quitting refers to employees who put no more effort into their jobs than necessary. It says at least half of the U.S. workforce consists of quiet quitters.
That's why you need to bring back office beatings. I mean, that'd be like, hey, Jimmy, you know, we've given you 2 months to meet your quota. You really haven't done dick. Look, it's not going to be, it's going to be a quick 10 minutes. Come on, let's go. Three guys, just toss them a beating and give them a little motivation. Hey, we got to get back to that shit.
Purposes only. You'd be an idiot to listen to anything these degenerates say. Invest at your own risk, do research, but seriously don't listen to these ass clowns. Now enjoy Cash Daddies.
Welcome to Cash Daddies, we're banking fatties. Wow, spring is in the air here in Los Angeles. Titties out, everyone's excited, nipples hard. My God, joining me as always from straight from the Tonight Show, Jay Nice, Johnny Woodard. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. Good. Happy to be here, Sam.
And, of course, looking good. Who knows what weird virus he has now? He is a petri dish of pharmaceutical drugs. How we do we? Bum, 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 bum. How we do we? Bum, 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 bum. Go on.
What's going on, man? I'm good. I'm good. I got GERD. You ever hear of GERD?
Yeah, dude. GERD. Yeah, I got a touch of it. Yeah, I got some of that.
GERD? What is GERD?
It's what I have.
They used to call it heartburn, but then they invented a disease called gastrointestinal reflux disease, some shit like that.
Oh, yeah. You love that, don't you, Howie? You love diseases, bro.
That's why I'm coughing, because the acids go up into your lungs.
Sorry. Gastroesophageal reflux disease. There you go.
Oh, thank you for fixing that, because we were going to mock you the whole show.
Yeah.
You didn't get it correct.
Somebody was. Somebody out there was like, that's not what it is.
All right, guys. Well, you know, we had a crazy week, right? We had a guest. We got a new guest coming in. A lot of stuff's going on. This TikTok bill is most likely going to cause chaos. Thank God the internet's here to catch it. It's nuts. Crazy times out there. Where do you guys want to start? What do you guys want to talk about? Well, I'm fine. I'm jacked up about it.
What do you think about the TikTok bill? Because, I mean, are you fine? Did you see them just lambasting that fucking Chinese dude? Like,
well, a lot of stuff's going on, Howie. And, like, obviously, this is not a conspiracy podcast. This is a podcast about making money. But we always find they make you look at one thing and then they sneak in another thing. And I was just talking to Johnny. This new bill that they are introducing is worse than the Patriot Act.
It's called the Zuckerberg bill. It's his bill.
Well, what it is basically is that they can throw you in jail if they don't like what you're doing on the internet.
Really? It's that?
You go, oh, we want to get rid of TikTok because of the Chinese. And then in reality, they're just trying to figure out ways to throw people in jail for talking mad shit.
I didn't know that. I did not hear that.
Nobody did. This is why the internet's so important, because everybody is pushing back really hard. And they should find out who inserted that into this bill, and they should be handcuffed and driven out of Washington, D.C., and left in the middle of somewhere in the Washington State Forest where interdimensional beings can run trains on their magic poles.
It's that bad, huh?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, I'll tell you who it's good for. It's good for Facebook and Twitter, because you get rid of TikTok and those venues just make more money.
Yep. Well, that's the whole thing. That's why they're trying to get TikTok to sell to an American company.
Gotcha.
You know,
oh, man, I don't know. I do think the Chinese are looking at us through their, through a lot of that shit.
So I was in,
dude, wait, can we just say really quickly? They're looking at us through this right here, Zoom.
Yeah, right now. They see us.
Right now.
Hi. You're right.
So,
you're right.
They make China the boogeyman. So, I was in, where was I? Where was I doing? Where was I? Oh, I was in Illinois. No, I was in Minnesota. And we went to go and eat at a barbecue place, and it was ran by Chinese people. Very nice Chinese people doing barbecue, which was very nice. But all I wanted to do was ask them if they pee-peed in the Coke. That's all I wanted to ask.
Dude, you've never had barbecue, cat? It's like lean, but it's good. It's healthy for you. They have it everywhere. There's a barbecue cat place in Chinatown. I go there every now and then.
I love it, Howie. That's probably where you got whatever disease you have this week.
No, that's that's different. That's the barbecue rat, not the cat. That's the rat.
Yeah, who gets sick more, Howie Dewey or white women in their 40s?
I kind of like a white woman in my 40s a little bit. I'd like to be. I'd like to have that kind of pull between my legs. I just don't.
Okay, wouldn't that be great? So, Howie, talk to me. How was your week? What's going on? Hanging, banging? What are we doing?
It's a wild week, man, because, like, it's look, it's the first time in, I think, 20-something years where I've talked, I'm reaching out to my people, I'm listening to analysts, I'm talking to a ton of different people. The one thing they all agree on is that we are going into some sort of recession. That is going to happen. And it's going to happen quickly, probably in the next month or so. How long it's going to last, no one really knows. But it definitely is going to happen. Interest rates crept up a little bit. Technology got smacked. We made a play today, the Patreons, man. We went in, bought some Devon, whatever the fuck you want to call it, DVN Energy. Great energy company. It's been drilled over the past 3 months. I think it's going to bounce back a little bit. Energy is a sector that will do fairly well in a recession. It should. So
energy should always do well. Energy is like becoming a hairstylist, right? Yeah. It is recession proof. Everybody needs a haircut.
You need something. Everybody's got to cook. Everyone's got to put petrol in their cars.
Yep. Yeah.
Or whatever. Electricity, if that's your thing.
I think that's everybody's thing. Whose thing isn't electricity? The Amish? Are they listening to this podcast?
Yeah, they're way out on
electricity. The Amish, the Quakers, they don't need it.
They're going to have to wait until it gets on vinyl, and then they just manually like hover. How do you – you can't listen to anything. It's got to be really hard being Amish. I'm just realizing that. That's a tough life,
dude. Well, it's not hard being Amish because you don't know what you're missing out on.
No, they do, though. They get to see people driving cars up and down the road. They get to hear music coming out of their cars. It's got to be even more tempting.
Don't they have that day of dick downs where they get to go out and just get weird?
Yeah, Rumspringa or whatever. Meeting. Yeah, I love that. Back. Isn't that a great concept?
It's a day of dick downs?
Yeah, they just go out, they hook up with black guys, and then they come back.
Oh, my God.
Actually, you they don't come back. Black. Not, that's the poor thing black they don't come dude. Back from.
What's imagine that?
The guy they hook up with, it's like, holy shit. Guys, listen, man. Have you ever gone down on a girl that's just a rug? Have you ever seen that in your life? I didn't know
that's the one. That's the one they never come back from. They're like, what happened to Becky? She got fucked by a black guy. She's gone. Yeah. That's the one thing that every father is she allowed
back? Are the village elders?
Oh, they'd love to have them back. They just never come back after that. The next time they see them, they're driving like an Escalade with braids in their hair.
Amish are like, we need to get some color in this community. Damn, dude.
I do not think
can't
that.
Can't win
no.
any basketball games.
Becky rides that horse a lot better than she used to. There's no pain. She just fucking flows. She rides that horse. She gets that thing going 30, 40 miles an hour now. Doesn't even complain. That's her new job.
So, you know, a lot of things are going on in the world. We're not going to get too much into it. But, you know, there's a lot of smoke screens going on because there's interesting stuff happening. And one thing is, I'd love to hear Howie's opinion on this, is what does the economic deal between Russia and China due to the petrodollar, Howie?
I mean, that's tough to tell. I mean, you know, not just Russia and China with the petrodollar, but fucking look what's going on in Saudi Arabia and Iran. I mean, to me, you know, I think that will help any kind of energy domestic company. Companies not involved with them. It's got to help companies like Chevron, I would think. I would think, in the long term. But, you know,
are you worried about what this means for the petrodollar and what that means for the U.S. economy?
I don't think it's going to have a huge impact, Sam. I really don't.
Johnny, thoughts?
I think this is just another thing.
Russia's a third world country.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I'm still not worried about Russia. It's China that concerns me. But I think China, we're just too deeply integrated with them economically for them to ever. I think, like you always say, Sam, China is, they want us to be afraid of China, but there's really, it's just a boogeyman. There's not much there. Don't get me wrong. Their military, I think, can definitely cause us problems, but they have no incentive to, because it would just, I mean, it would tank both our economies.
Right, right, I'm with you on that. But what does all of these countries somewhat agreeing to sell their oil in the, what is it, the yen and the yuan? Why is Chinese money named after Mexicans?
I don't know. It's a weird name. The Yuan.
The Yuan?
Yeah. But I don't think it's a lot of
is Jesus not available?
I mean, look. You know, where's China get all of their energy from? I mean, look, what it all comes down to, you know, what would worry me more is like, okay, shit, we got real problems with Saudi Arabia now. That's a problem because, I mean, what's that? They produce what? So half the fucking world's oil or whatever it is? It's ridiculous. So that would be more of a short-term problem. Although, it'd be nice to see companies like Devon Energy, which is an American company, they're, you know, drilling off of Delaware and Texas and wherever else. Because we know the real deal, man. The United States, how much oil do we have in the United States? Enough to last us, what, another 1,000 years?
Well, that's the whole thing. So I heard this ad today that was very interesting on the radio, because like Johnny says, I'm an old guy who still listens to AM radio.
Yes. Yes.
Johnny, just so you know, I'm advancing a little bit. I listen to Sirius Radio now, so please stop.
So you finally made like 2006. Good job, dude.
Yeah, I'm in nice. 2006. So it was talking about how that basically California now gets 75% of its oil from foreigners when we have so much oil here. California has so much oil. We don't need that. But because our politicians are scumbags, they go get oil from other places, which causes the price of oil to go up.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I would love to know the exact, and I'll have to look this up, how many reserves we actually have and how many we use. Because, you know, any person in that field will tell you we have enough oil, shit, just for Texas, out in the ocean on the Gulf of Mexico to last us hundreds of years. But yet, we're always shipping it in.
Yeah, it's super interesting, the game's getting played and what our politicians are doing to us. It's definitely
related to China. Did you guys see that Sam Bankman-Fried was charged with paying $40 million in China to China in bribery? Yeah,
while he 40 billion or million?
Million. 40 million. Yeah.
Million. So
to bribe Chinese officials, yeah.
But and guess how much he spent in America? 70 million and charged with nothing.
Yeah, well, that's great.
When it's said and done, this guy's got to do some time, man. I mean,
I can't imagine him not doing time.
Yeah. This kid is just a walking crook.
Yeah, he's a scumbag raised by scumbag people. Psychopaths make more psychopaths.
On the other hand, what's going on with Binance, Johnny?
And overseas, I mean, it's absolutely screwed. I don't know about the U.S. version. The U.S. version is not. I mean, let's see.
Bitcoin sure took a tank right after it.
The only thing I see is that U.S. regulators are targeting Binance now, but that's. And then now, if you're talking about the U.K. version, they've suspended deposits in the U.K., but that was like 2 weeks ago.
They're never going to allow crypto. You have that Yemen lady who runs the IMF or the WB.
Oh, she sucks.
And she's like, she's literally came out going, if we don't control crypto, we will lose our power. And this is what they're doing. They're creating these things, crashing them. They're going after crypto controls, even though they've allowed other ones that they've worked with to crash and burn just so people beg for legislation. This is all being done on purpose. Everything's being done on purpose. None of it is naturally happening. I'm sorry. It's all bullshit. And no, now you got something I talked about on one of my other podcasts. Now you got First National buying out Silicon Valley Bank, which is what we said their whole plan was, for these bigger banks to buy up all these regional banks. Tank these banks so they got to come in and you scoop them up at pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
Here's the latest, by the way. This is from Forbes. It says the CFTC, that's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, says that Binance has failed to properly register with the relevant authorities and has broken rules designed to tackle money laundering, which is what you're always saying, Sam. So they could be eventually targeted for a crackdown. We're waiting for firm word on that, but the early signs are that they have run afoul of regulators here in the United States.
It's so well, and also, I mean, of course he's like, dude, this whole thing is because Sam Bankman-Fried is a egomaniac scumbag, okay? And his ego got so much part of him, he wanted them to go after Binance, okay?
Or he's an actor who they said, hey, we'll give you a big ride, buddy. You can be a billionaire for a couple of years, but you're going to have to take the fall eventually because we're trying to take down crypto. Or that. That, wow. I don't think they would tell
the second part. They just could. When you sell your soul, you know, they'll do whatever they want with you.
Well,
they'll
that's what selling your soul is, though, knowing that eventually you're going to have to pay on the end. Now, whether they gave him the specifics or not, I think he knew. Yeah.
So he is bribing all these politicians in Washington. He tells them to go after Binance, who has like $2 billion in his exchange. So then he finds this out and he goes, I think I'll pull my money out of this exchange, which starts the run, which brings down the house of cards. So both these guys screwed each other over and they both got giant egos.
Well, I talked to a guy this weekend, and I'm being where I live right here. I run into finance guys all day long. I talked to a guy, works for one of the largest financial companies in the world. And we talked about crypto, you know, and I said, you know, look, when it's all said and done, you know, what's going to be standing? And he said, here's the deal. He said, do not buy anything else except for Bitcoin. And I said, what about Ethereum? He said, no. He goes, not when it's all said and done. He literally told me that Bitcoin was the only thing that they feel on Wall Street will be standing when this whole thing's said and done.
Why is that, Howie? Because, I mean, I feel the same way. That's the only thing I'm putting any money into right now in the crypto space. But it's not the most efficient. It's not the best for transactions. It's not the best for really anything except for, I guess, it has some security based on longevity. But that's it. Why did he say why?
Because I asked him why.
I mean, based on its pure utility, there's not a great reason.
Because very wealthy people hold the most of it. That's what he said.
Okay.
He said institutions and individual, the wealthiest people hold Bitcoin. They don't hold anything else. They hold Bitcoin. They said everything else. He said, first of all, 90% of all the other coins are scam. Even the ones that may not be, when it's all said and done, they regulate the shit out of everything. He said, Bitcoin's the only thing that I would say to buy. That's what he said. I mean, I was like, wow. You know, Ethereum is supposed to be pretty good. He said, nah, I wouldn't mess with it. And this dude is in the trenches every single day. That's what he does. Deals with just trillions of dollars.
Well, here's the thing about Bitcoin. It's the only one that doesn't have a central headquarters. The only problem it has is that it's connected to Tether, and there's as someone would used to talk about on the show all the time, that Tether has its own problems, right? It's connected to the Chinese government and all that stuff. So that's how Bitcoin goes down.
We should say also, Hex made a big run up to 12 cents. I mean, yeah, 12 cents. It's now back down to 7, but there's a lot of, I think Richard Hart himself tweeted out that they're about to finally launch Pulse Chain. So keep your eyes open for that. He said it could happen any second. Yeah, it's about 7 cents right now.
Johnny, if it breaks during the show, don't hesitate to stop the show and tell us.
I won't hesitate. Okay?
Yeah, not hesitate.
Yeah, just that's one. I mean, jumping down. I don't know. I asked this guy. I actually did ask this guy about Hex. He goes, I got to be honest with you, I never heard of it. He goes, nah, I've never. But, you know, this is, he said about Bitcoin. He said some very wealthy institutions and individuals own Bitcoin. He said, so because of that, it's probably not going anywhere. You know, I mean, look, when Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, they own Bitcoin.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
And if those skunkers are behind
we have the guest here. If you guys want to get on to that, we'll get back to the stories.
We got a guest. Who's our guest, Howie?
We got a kick-ass guest today, man, and he's coming in hot because he's talking about the most important thing in the economy right now. What is the next bubble? And he's going to talk about corporate real estate and how many small banks could get fucked when they stop.
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite thing. Hey, guys, we're really excited to talk to you about our friend at Mint Mobile.
If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals this year, why are you still paying insane amounts of money every month for your phone bill? Switch to Mint Mobile. That's the easiest way to save this year. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile allows you to order from home and save a ton with phone plans starting at just $15 a month.
Wow, that's a lot of savings there. I mean, I'm spending hundreds of dollars on my mobile service, man. $15 a month, bang, bang, pow. That's a lot, man. I'm excited. Hard nipples.
For people looking for extra savings this year, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for just $15 a month. By going online only and eliminating the traditional cost of retail, Mint Mobile passes significant savings on to you. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and switch easily in minutes with eSIM. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless starting at just $15 a month.
All right, guys, to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/cash. Okay, that's mintmobile.com/cash. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/cash.
All right, fellas, here we go right now. This guy's been on the show before. He's a real estate, Wall Street guy, Ivy League grad, smart guy, comedian. Here's my boy, Mehul Patel, man. How you doing, Mehul?
I'm doing well, Howie. How are you?
Awesome. Awesome.
Good word, brother. How are you? Thanks for coming back on the show. We appreciate you. We were happy when you got, we got you on the first time, but it's great that you come back and slummed with us again. You must
enjoy it. Happy to be here, man.
Yeah, I got you on the show, and this is perfect timing, because anybody who's listening right now, all you've heard over the past week is, I don't care if it's Fox Business, CNBC, any kind of financial news network is talking about the next bubble. You know, last week it was regional and small banks. You know, it looks like these things have kind of eased off and they're going to a better place. But the bottom line is, everybody on CNBC is saying, what's going to happen with corporate real estate? It's corporate real estate. That is the next bubble because, and you can tell us about this, Mehul, but I want to say 80 to 90% of all regional banks are the ones financing corporate real estate deals. Is that right?
Yeah, on the commercial side, yeah. I mean, the regional banks definitely make up a big percent of all of the financing that goes into whether it's office buildings, hotels, apartment buildings, shopping centers. They make up at a minimum 2/3, but it's probably 3/4 of loans that are out there are in those regional banks.
So here's a question. Let's say I'm a regional bank in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And 4 years ago, I financed a deal right here in Manhattan. They're doing a ground up construction, 80 floors, I don't know, 75, 80 floors of corporate retail space,
yep,
at a certain price. And all of a sudden, it's about built. And now they're screwed because they can't get anyone to go in and lease the space. What happens?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's two types of loans you can get. The construction loan is designed where you have to pay it back, right, at a certain point in time. They'll give you a little bit of leeway, you know, say it takes 2 years, 3 years to build a building, and then maybe they're going to give you 12 months to lease up. And then their expectation is you go out and you get a mortgage, a permanent mortgage, that will help pay back the entirety of that construction loan. But, you know, if no one's leasing the building, real estate in general, the value of real estate is based on the activity in the building. If there's no activity in the building, the real estate has no value, right? So if you have an office building, a hotel, apartment building, if there's no tenants, no activity, there's no value. So the building isn't zero value because the steel and the glass and all of that has some value. But, you know, to take out the construction loan, the thought is, oh, yeah, you're going to have rental income. Then this other lender will come along and give you a loan because they feel like, all right, we're going to get paid because there's a tenant. Rent's going to come in. You're going to pay the interest and principal, and we're happy.
You're going to have cash flow.
Yeah, that's not happening, right? So a lot of real estate developers that are at the end of a project now that are struggling to get a tenant, it's a bit like the clock is getting closer and closer to midnight. And
now, is this not happening for the reason that, you know, I'm seeing in New York, and I'm seeing this stuff. I'm seeing, you know, let's talk about like 1515, the big building in Times Square.
Yeah. You've got
thousands of people. We're going there every single day, 30, 40,000 people going there every day to work, and then COVID hits.
Yep.
So for the next 2 years, they work at home, and now they're not going back.
Yep.
And it's every company. They're not going back into these buildings.
Well, that's a little bit of a different situation, right? So 1515 Broadway, that's already built. Right. Already built. It's got tenants. Some of those tenants have 7-year leases, 8-year leases, 5-year leases. So the clock is ticking on those leases. Right. So if let's say you have an average of 7 years of lease length in that building, you might be able to ride out this storm. Right. But if you're a landlord that has a big lease and there's only a year left, and you know you have to pay your loan in a year and a half, what's going to happen? That lease may not renew, so you have nobody. And if you're fortunate, they renew and it's at a lower rent rate, which means you're going to get less money in the refinancing. Your building is just worth a lot less than you expected. You may not even have enough money to pay back your in-place loan. So I think with the commercial space, particularly office, a lot of it has to do with how much term do you have left on those tenants? Or do they get 4 years, 3 years, 7 years? How much time is left? But on newer product, obviously stuff that's just being built, there is no tenant in some instances, right? So that can be pretty scary for a real estate developer.
So how could these smaller banks get hurt more?
How could they continue to get hurt more?
Yeah.
Well,
because a lot of these analysts are talking about today, look, it's starting to look like we are going to probably go into a recession here soon.
Yeah.
And this corporate real estate problem, that's just adding fuel to the fire. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, look, for these regional banks, if they can't get loans paid back, I mean, that's a huge problem. Obviously, that's their business, is collecting on that, right? So what'll happen is, let's say I had a loan and, you know, I'm just like, hey, I did everything I could. I can't get a tenant in here. I can't get another loan to take out you guys. What'll happen is, it's quote unquote, the developer or the landlord will throw back the keys. And the problem the lender has is, now they've foreclosed, they own a property. Banks, A, are not property owners. They're not good at running property. So you have that problem, but your loan still isn't paid back. I mean, so you still have that burning hole in your balance sheet. Like, it still had that $50 million, $20 million, whatever, $10 million loan still hasn't gotten paid back. So the best you can do is foreclose. Let's say the loan was for $15 million and you go out to the open market and you're just like, all right, let's just sell it for 10. We'll take a $5 million loss. Let's get what we can. You know, a lot of that, you saw a lot of that happen in 2008. You know, that's called distressed debt.
You think a bunch of this could happen at the same time?
It could. Yeah. I mean, look, just in the office space, 2024 has, I believe, $20 billion of loans maturing just in the CMBS space. That's not even including the regional banks. So, yeah, it could. I mean, loans are maturing every month. And so we're going to start to see this cascade at pretty soon, because there's no bridge loans anymore. It's all kind of stopping right now. And that's why you're seeing the headlines right now. That's why people are pointing towards the commercial real estate market as being the next part of this. The regional banks wobbled, right? And now within that wobbling, they have the issue of these loans that are coming due. Are they going to get paid back or not? And I actually think that's a little bit more of a problem than what you saw at Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic and Signature.
Yeah, they're saying this could be 10 times worse.
Yeah.
Let me ask something real quick. So I'm a conspiracy theorist. I love conspiracies because I'm right all the time. But there's been a giant belief that this whole COVID thing, we don't want to get into too much of that weeds, but that basically where there's moratorium on rent really, really put landlords in awful places, that they couldn't, they weren't having income coming in like you're talking about, and they were going to have to either default on their mortgage or sell their houses, and these giant investment banks could come in and buy at a very, very cheap rate. Do you think that's also happened in the commercial property area where basically Zoom and all this stuff, this pandemic changed the way we operated? People don't necessarily want to have to go into the office anymore, which I think does a lot of damage to communities.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And meeting with people and having connection and working together as for a goal. And it's caused these places to want to have to sell their property at penny, like you're kind of talking, at giant losses, and allowing these big companies who get bailed out by the Federal Reserve all the time to cover up any of their losses. It's so unfair, the system they have right now. But do you think this might be been done on purpose?
I don't think it was done on purpose, because one reason is, you know, there was a trend here before the pandemic, right? I think one thing that is not making the headlines at all is, before the pandemic, you guys all know about WeWork and, you know, co-share office space. That trend was what was underpinning a lot of the office leasing in major cities, right? If you pulled out WeWork and all the co-share leasing that was happening in some markets, there was what they call negative absorption, which means more leases were coming off and not being rented. So more space was being put on the market. What underpinned that, what made that not as bad, was all of this co-share office. That was a bubble. It's been, that business model has been around a long time, and it it's not that great of a business model. So not a lot of people were in real estate were surprised at that bubble burst. So you had that already. That was, you know, WeWork was falling apart probably in 2018, 2019. We saw that just like the threads coming off of that thing. So the office market, to me, had some problems before the pandemic. It just got ignored. Right. I think a lot of people just were like, yeah, let's just keep building. Let's keep building. And when you keep interest rates that low for that long, all it does is encourage excess supply because it's cheap to build. It's cheap.
Everyone agrees that interest rates were just.
They were just too low. I mean, they kept them too low for too long. And this was just a full on 100% sugar diet. That's what happened. And this is the crash when you come off of that sugar diet. So like, I think that we already had a problem in the office market. We probably would have slowly gone to remote work and it would have been stretched maybe over a decade, 12 years, as opposed to what I do agree is the pandemic just put it on steroids, right? We went almost overnight, what would have probably taken this entire decade to get to where we have, you know, 40, 50% of the people in the office at any given time. That probably was going to happen at the end of this decade anyway, but it just went supersonic. And so now it's going to be pretty painful to go through that over the next 2 or 3 years. What I do think will happen is the higher quality offices, the really class A offices, will over time be fine. It's the B and C properties that are lesser quality. I don't know what's going to happen to them. I think they're really going to see some real impairment. It's going to be difficult to see where you get the value other than using it for something else. Maybe, you know, at the right price, maybe you can convert it to an apartment and maybe you can use it for something else. But I think the office problem actually was started. It was happening well before, I think, the pandemic.
And you talk about domino effect. What you're talking about now, okay, the B and C offices, which are hundreds of thousands of units, nobody's moving into them. They're built. They're staying there. So what the hell happens in new construction? Because you talk about one of the biggest job markets in New York City, which hires hundreds of thousands of people, is new construction. So if new construction comes to a halt, looks to me like a few people are going to lose some jobs.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost no doubt new construction is going to... I mean, first of all, you can't get a loan right now. You can't get a construction loan to build an office building. Nobody's going to give you that loan. So there's no financing for it. Nobody's got the risk appetite to be like, yeah, I'm going to build a freaking office building anywhere. Nobody really is going to do that. So the supply is going to stop. The office supply is going to stop. I mean, we need it to stop because if you keep adding to this, we don't have the tenants to backfill this. But like I said, the newer stuff that was built, the rents that they thought they were going to get probably are going to come down. They're not going to get the $120 a foot rent or whatever they were projecting. It's probably going to be lower, but those spaces will get filled. But what always gets crushed are the lower quality assets. But to your point, this, you know, raising interest rates, they knew that this would happen, right? Part of it was to bring down prices. So if you stop building, if suddenly there's no office buildings in the pipeline, what happens to construction costs? They're going to go down, right? Yeah. Because the demand for construction workers is going to go down. It's the cost of the labor that's really driving the cost of construction. So construction costs will start to come down. So when a new apartment building gets built, the rents aren't going to be having to be as quite as high. So that's the deflationary effect of all of this. The whole thing about we got to get inflation to come down. It will. It's just going to hurt. Like I said, when you're on an all sugar diet and you just stop, you are going to feel like crap for a while. Like you got to get it out of your system.
I read where Houston. And I've been to Houston a couple times in the last year. You go down to Houston, all those big...
You love black women.
I do. Only ones with ankle bracelets. But
that's projecting.
I was down in Houston, I'm looking at these huge, you know, 40, 50, 60-floor buildings, old oil corporations. Nobody's in these things. They're empty. 100% empty. And they're going to stay empty. Like, what? There's just going to be empty. It's going to be
The vacancy is going to – we're going to experience vacancy. We're already at, I think, in New York, we're at 14%. San Francisco's pretty close to that as well. That's a huge number already. And it's likely to continue. But, to Sam's point, I actually think the pendulum on this remote work is going to change, not right away. 3, 4, 5 years down the road, we are going to see that one, just the mental health part of this is, it's not great. But then there's, America is a business, right? That's, which I think is a good thing. So people think that's like an evil thing to say. I don't. I think that's fine. America is a business. It is what it is. What we're going to see is lack of efficiency. We're going to see that these companies aren't innovating the way that they used to. And I do think, and this is my opinion, but I do think in 4 or 5 years, we're going to see some more companies saying, no, you are coming back. And that's going to be a requirement of the job that you're here at least 4 days a week.
I think so.
I think so, because
yeah,
we're so early into this, right? This whole working from home is still pretty early. And there's just countless people I know that are saying that they're starting to see the inefficiency of it.
Now, I'm curious, do you think that Meta has a role in all of this and their ideas for telepresence? They envision a future where you telecommute, but you, by putting on, a headset or ideally a pair of glasses, I think, in the distant future. And then it's as though you're there. Do you have any faith in that and the development of that technology?
I mean, ultimately the U.S. economy is always based on, our growth is technology. I mean, these phones that we have, I don't see how anybody could have envisioned how much we use them, how many, industries it's changed. And in a very short period of time. So I'm not going to be the guy who owns the CD store saying, yeah, these are going to be here forever. I think it's a, I still think that in person, it's not so much that simulates you being there. It's the little things of being in the office. We have such a push towards mental health and being able to be a good manager. I don't see how you can be a good manager of somebody like Howie unless you see him every day.
Well,
right?
A good manager wouldn't represent Howie. Hire Howie.
Like you, unless you see someone every day, you can't tell if they're having a bad day because everything looks the same to you, right? You have nothing to compare what Howie looks like on a good day, which he doesn't have that many. But, when he does, what it looks like. So I just think from just a managing people standpoint, You could try to make meetings virtual. I think that helps with if you have companies that are cross border, they're in another country, that might simulate that. But I think actually being with your coworkers 6, 7, 8, 9 hours a day, I think it matters because one thing that I think we're losing, honestly, is, when I used to go to the office all the time, I didn't like all of my coworkers. There's some coworkers that I disagreed with on everything from sports, politics, music, the way they dressed, everything. But I did think, professionally speaking, they knew what they were doing. I could work with them. And I was able to find a way to work with somebody that I had nothing in common with. And I don't know if you get that through the metaverse.
Yeah, and like if you're at home, you can't take a 3-minute walk and go into the vending machine room and like sniff some strange girl's hair. You can't do that at home.
You're defending staying at home now, Howie. Come on.
Where you can communicate and every now and then. Yeah, I mean that's the motivation for getting in there.
I think, aren't you finding people, you kind of referenced this earlier, but people, it does seem not just employers, but also employees are kind of missing, a lot of people are turning back now. I think we talked about this last week to places like WeWork and the office sharing kind of situations because they just miss commuting, which is impossible.
I think they miss a routine.
Yeah,
but
getting out of the house, get your head out of that mindset.
It gets difficult. I mean, people are putting themselves under house arrest,
Right. Yeah. I think people are missing community. And a big city, though, it's like, I'm very blessed. We're forced to know each other, our neighbors. You know, the young lady who lives across the street from us has said maybe three words to us the whole time. She's very nice. We just don't. But everyone else, we're all friends with. But this is very unique. I mean, people just don't talk to each other in the big city. And I think people get lonely and they kind of like enjoy going to work and seeing other people, having that kind of drama that's involved with all that. And I think the more we try to rearrange everything and change the way humans work, we start to learn that there's a basic building blocks of us that we really like to stick with. And that only expands so far away from that.
Yeah, basically, look, jail is the worst place on earth. And on the worst place on earth, the way they punish people is they put them in solitary confinement, right? I mean, because it's even worse than jail. And so I just think that, you know, isolation is not great. And I think for somebody who's younger, I grew up very middle class. So when I came to New York, I didn't really have much of a professional Rolodex. And that Rolodex and network was built by going to the office. I mean, I just wouldn't have developed those relationships otherwise. There's just no way I would have developed those. And that's kind of how you move your career. You get another job, you learn about another opportunity, is, you know, being around those people. So I do think to your point, Sam, that this pendulum has really gone extreme. I do think over time it'll come back, but do I think it's going to entirely solve this office issue? No, I don't. There's going to be some real pain that's felt in the next 2 to 3 years. The values they're just going to drop pretty significantly in a lot of these office sectors, clearly in cities, but even certain suburban office product is going to really struggle as well.
What do you think about the fact that now they're talking about turning some of these commercial properties into residential properties?
Look, you know, I mean, it can be done, but there's just also physical limitations of what you can do, right? You know, just imagine a very big square. If these are the windows, I mean, how deep are your living rooms going to be? How deep are your bedrooms going to be? Like do you want some light and air, right? So you could, there's just physical constraints. Not every building, I mean, they were purpose built for office. They weren't.
That's what the, what you're
you know,
saying.
They weren't,
what
there was no said? Intention for them to be converted, you know, and then every city has a different rule of thumb where it's like, you know, most cities, you have to have windows that open.
Yep.
And so, you know, where are your cost savings going to be? You have to essentially get the building for so cheap that you're almost buying it for what the land would have traded for. So I think you can do it in some cases, but I don't think we want to go back to, you know, what New York looked like in the 19th century, where, you know, the housing was horrible, where, you know, you have, you know, immigrants coming over from Europe living in really tough, tough conditions. I mean, a lot of these laws are in place because, you know, you can't have a bedroom that doesn't have a window, right? You can't have a living room that doesn't have a window. You can't have a windowless apartment. It's illegal.
That's the problem in Houston. They wanted to convert these large corporate offices to residential. And the engineers went in there and said, it's not possible under any situation because of the windows.
You know, some you can, but it's difficult and it's expensive. You know, I mean, One Wall Street is a perfect example. That was the Bank of New York building. It was their headquarters, beautiful old school building on, you know, Wall Street and Broadway. They just converted it to luxury, super luxury condos. But those condos cost over $2,000 a foot because the cost to do this was so expensive. So even if you can convert it, who's buying, right? 1,000 square foot apartments, $2 million. I mean, how many people can afford that? So like, even if you can convert it, the cost is so high. I mean, I just don't know how many people are going to be able to afford the final product anyway, even if it's physically possible.
Yeah. Do you see New York City bouncing back? I mean, and this is from a long view of what's going on in the city. You hear it's not the same. LA is bounced back in a weird way. It's not the same kind of artist town that it was. All the outlaws are gone. All that's left are rich kids who try to act like outlaws and don't know what the fuck they're doing because their feelings get hurt all the time. They're trying to live. Not everybody's built for the outlaw life. They're trying, but they're not built for it. Outlaws are outlaws, and nerd dorks need to shut the fuck up. But the point is this. Do you think that New York City is going to bounce back, or will it take a while to get to what it was pre?
I you know, I've been in New York 25 years, so I love this city. But if I'm being honest, it's going to take time. I mean, it really is. I think at some point, you know, we have a tax issue here. It's just the cost of living here is incredibly high. And a lot of that has to do with the tax situation. And we're losing, you know, important businesses because of that. I mean, I think the anchors that I don't think are going to leave New York is, you know, media, law, and finance. I think those pillars will always be here. So you have sort of, you know, where the floor is. I don't think we would dip below that floor, but we're coming down to it. And I do think it is going to take some time. I mean, I think what's going to have to happen is, you know, what you were just talking about, converting offices to residential. We were talking about the financial feasibility and the physical feasibility. But then there's the whole, right now, you can't do it because of the zoning, right? Like, even if those two things weren't on the table and we found solutions for them, we couldn't do it because the way the zoning code has been written, you can't convert 80% of these buildings into apartments. So until you have City Hall and, you know, state legislation doing things consciously saying, look, we have to put some new policy in place that's going to encourage changing the city, I don't, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, one thing they've now issued, you know, there's four groups bidding for the first casino license in Manhattan, right? That's something that's brand new. The locations are very interesting locations that I think will help those neighborhoods. One's in Times Square, one's in Hudson Yards, one's on the East Side, one's out in Coney Island. One of those groups will get it. That's a big catalyst. It's the first time that's ever happened here, right? So I think we're going to have to do things like that. I'm not saying build 20 casinos here, but there's going to have to be some other things where they say, you know what? We're gonna move forward with that. We're either gonna change this zoning and allow this, or, you know, we're gonna have a tax abatement and start issuing these so people aren't getting crushed on their taxes. These encourage businesses to come here, but that's gonna take time. You know, unfortunately, things are probably gonna have to get a little worse before people feel like they have to make those policy changes.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, it's like California, man. California's in the same shit. Our taxes are ridiculous out there.
I mean, it's getting crazy. Well, yeah. Del, thank you so much for coming on. Always appreciate talking to you. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, man. I'm somebody who thinks humans adapt, that, you know, everybody thinks doom and gloom. People will adapt. People figure out ways to survive and thrive. We'll see. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting, though. It's going to be interesting. Thanks for coming on, buddy. One more time, where can they find you?
You can find me at Mehul Patel, NYC, on Instagram, Twitter. You can find me there, and you can find me doing spots with Howie in New York.
I'm sorry.
Hey, brother. I'll be down to look at an office tomorrow.
All right, man. Yeah, give me a ring.
Will do.
All right, man. Make sure you send all your links to Johnny so he can add it to the to the show notes. Thanks for coming on, dude.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. We want to tell you about our friend, Jay Zickman, and CopyMyCrypto.com.
Guys, we've seen so many people making ridiculous money from crypto, but did you know it would be really easy for you to do the same? The Copy My Crypto membership site shows you the coins that YouTuber James McMahon personally holds and allows you to copy him. It's like having a big brother who knows exactly what he's doing. You don't need to know a thing about crypto or how to invest. You simply do what he does. So let me tell you more about James. He runs the Crypto with James YouTube channel, which despite heavy censorship, something we're familiar with, has more than 26,000 members. Since March 2020, he's told his viewers to buy 26 crypto coins. Had you put $100 into each one, it would have gone on to be worth $123,000. Of the 26 coins, his top pick of the year, a coin called Phantom, went up 692 times from when he named it. That one call has retired a number of people, including guys in their 20s and 30s. And remember, this is public knowledge. You can go to YouTube and verify it yourself. So if you'd like to join the 2,800 members who copy James, then stop what you're doing and head over to copymycrypto.com/Sam.
That's copymycrypto.com/Sam. That's S-A-M. You'll not only find proof of everything that Johnny said, but our listeners get full access for just $1, okay? Once again, that's copymycrypto.com/Sam. The recession is here, guys. You can suffer with like everyone else, or choose to thrive. James is the real deal. Go check out his site now. Okay, man, that was a great interview. Good insight. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. You know, will we become too comfortable with Zoom? How pissed is Skype that Zoom came in and just stole its milkshake?
They did. They set Skype under.
Patel, it's great.
So it's also one thing, you know, a lot of people, Elon got into this a lot and he got a lot of shit for it, but there are so many people who work from home that just don't do a damn thing, dude. You know what I mean? They just don't do shit. Cause when you know, it's impossible for somebody to know whether you're actually working when you work from home. And there's this new thing that Gen Z is doing. It's called silent quitting. Have you heard of this? It's where you don't quit. You just don't do the job. You just do the absolute minimum. There's another name for it too. It's like a thing that Gen Zers are doing instead of just quitting their jobs that they're not happy with. They're just silently quitting and they're not doing shit.
They're doing a fucking George Costanza, man. They're just showing up and sleeping under the desk.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Quiet quitting, another word for it, refers to employees who put no more effort into their jobs than necessary. And that's a new thing. It says at least half of the U.S. workforce consists of quiet quitters.
You know, that's why you need to bring back office beatings. I mean, that'd be like, hey, Jimmy, you know, we've given you 2 months to meet your quota. You really haven't done dick. Look, it's not going to be, it's going to be a quick 10 minutes. Come on, let's go. Three guys, just toss them a beating, and give them a little motivation. Hey, we got to get back to that shit.
I'm with you. I saw the Apple. Howie, I'm curious. You know, you're seeing a lot more now of these. Whenever you go to check out somewhere online, you get an option to pay later. And it's like it's not a traditional credit setup, because often it's like a flat fee. Some of them anyway have like a flat fee and you can pay back in like 4 installments. And then, you know, it's a $5 premium.
I heard that today.
Apple now is getting to that. That was the big news today, and I'm just going to read the lead here. Apple is officially getting into the buy now, pay later game with the introduction of its new Apple Pay Later program. Announced at the WWDC last June, Apple Pay Later allows consumers to apply for Apple Pay Later loans of $50 to $1,000 to make purchases online or in-app purchases made through their iPhones or iPads. And yeah, it's... flexible payment options. They can pay back, you know, choose the number of installments. Consumers who use Apple Pay Later will see their purchases split into 4 payments across 6 weeks.
Can you imagine, like, going out with the chick for the first time, bringing her to a fucking 5-star restaurant? You order a bottle of wine. You know, the bill between you and this girl is like $730. And she's like, yeah, you want me to chip in? No, man. I only got to put down 87 tonight. I got 6 months to pay the rest of this fucking dinner off. Don't worry, babe. I got this. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, it's got it. Yeah, it's just going to lead to bad financial decisions, though, don't you think?
Can we get that $500 bottle of wine? Are you sure? Yeah, I'm going to pay it off by next February.
The only thing, and here I'm just going to read this. Though there are no fees and interest, users will, however, need to connect a debit card to your Apple Wallet to use Apple Pay later to repay the loan. If you don't have enough cash in your bank account at the time of repayment, you might be assessed a fee by your bank, is what they're saying. Apple says their users' credit will not take a hit when they apply for an Apple Pay Later loan, so it's not a hard credit check, since the service only does a soft credit check. So there you go.
Wow.
Interesting.
What are you doing? Well, I'm going to South Africa next week. That's kind of expensive. Yeah, I got a year to pay it off. Don't worry.
Just going to make some bad decisions, right?
Yeah, I don't like the sound. That's going to put a lot of people under. You know? I mean, you give some 23-year-old kid right out of college, he moves to New York, one bad night can set him back a year, believe me. All it takes is one bad night.
Bangkok. One bad night in Bangkok makes a hot man crumble. Are you going to be able to pay for hookers on discount?
That's a good question, because...
Still paying off this BJ 3 months later?
No, for real, you can, because... Yeah, you can go online in New York. You can get an escort for $750, and they take MasterCard and Visa. So, you could be like, oh, this is a great deal, man. I had fucking Alexis last night for 3 hours, and it only cost me a down payment of $120. You know, I got 6 months to pay the rest of that ass off.
That's funny.
That's funny. This is not going to go well.
Last thing I just wanted to hit really quickly is that Disney has started – those 7,000 layoffs, and apparently Bob Iger sent out this email that was pretty harsh employees, and they so Disney slashing. That's why you bring a bulldog like that back, though, right? To just knock people on the head, get them out of the clean shop, make it tighter.
Here's what's gonna happen. He's gonna jump on the sword, he's gonna do all the mean things that the company needs done, and then he'll quit, and they'll send him off with a lot of cash, so he gets all the negative. He's a sin eater. You eat all the sins,
That stock's gonna go through the roof, because you know he'll be the bad guy, but the stock's gonna go up. Same thing with Amazon. How many people? Amazon lays off like 5,000 every 2 weeks now. It's amazing.
Yeah. What is it? Is it just they just all hired too many people during the pandemic? Is that what's going on?
I think so. A lot of it. A lot of it's mid-management, though, upper management. I think you might see a lot more of that over the next 3 to 6 months.
Well, it seems like a lot of these modern companies have way too many people in management.
Yeah.
Yes,
they do.
Why is that? Is it just that they kept promoting too many people, or what? Why do you think that is?
Absolutely. I mean, there's certain divisions that, you know, this division is supposed to do this. And after 6 months, they haven't done shit. So they're like, yeah, we can cut this out, save $1 million here, million here. Next thing you know, you lay off 5,000 upper middle management, you just save the company $1 billion. And that's what's going on right now. I mean, a lot of these companies are Facebook, Amazon, and Google, and you see the stock prices going up. They're saving
money. With Twitter too. I mean, Elon, God, he slashed and burned that damn operation, and there still seems to work. I turn it on, it works every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, you got anything else, Howie?
You know, the only thing I'll say, home prices are starting to fall. That's a big one. I mean, it's the third month in a row, home prices. And you know what's crazy? They actually fell a lot more where you guys are, out west, than the east. So
really?
Home prices in California, San Francisco, Texas, they're really falling. Probably a good time to buy a house.
Is it really?
It's crazy.
Even with the interest rates where they are?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good time to buy a house right now?
I mean, if prices continue to fall, absolutely. Yeah.
How about the mortgage rates?
Yeah, you know what? You can work something out. There's tons of ways you can knock that thing down a little bit.
How's that, Howie? How would you do that? Paying more down? Is that what you mean?
you can get an adjustable rate. You know, there's all kinds of first time buyer incentives.
Oh, I see.
And things like that. So, yeah, I think, I mean, when prices fall, that's when you want to buy. But they may continue to fall. I see, you know, in California, they say that's a good area right now.
Is that because of all the people moving away, you think, from California during the pandemic?
Could be. That's where some of the houses are coming. Because, you know, there's certain areas in New York that just there's no supply. Tons of demand, no supply. You guys seem to have a lot more supply right now. I guess in San Francisco, there's tons of houses.
Yeah, I mean, shit, you hear that place. It sounds like a war zone now. I mean, I've heard of so many people leaving San Francisco.
I had a friend that just got back from San Francisco, and he said it was just a shithole. I'm like, I thought that was a beautiful city.
It used to be until they progressivism had its way with it, and now it's a shit.
Yeah, like you said.
So, what's your pick this week, Howie?
You know, I think I picked Oxy last week, and I think it's up like 15% from last week.
Damn.
Oxy was under 60 bucks. Warren Buffett owns 23% of the company now. He just keeps buying it.
That's a good sign.
I love it. I love OXY. But I think energy is the play going forward again. I sold some XLE when it was up above 90, and I'm buying it back here around 80. XLE has a bunch of different energy and oil companies, Chevron. I like XLE right here. It's a ETF. It's safe, pays a decent dividend. DVN, Devon Energy, that's the one we bought today. So I forgot to say this. Devon Energy, DVN, we bought some calls on it. You know that thing's paying a 10.5% dividend right now?
Damn.
10.5% yield. If you buy that stock and it doesn't move for the next 3 months, you're getting a 10.5% yield on that. It's like $5. It's something ridiculous. So I think energy's the play. That's the sector. DVN, I love it.
Right on. All right. That's it for us, right, Sam? We're heading over to Patreon.
Yep. Guys, come get weird with us at the Patreon. That's where the bangers bang.